y'all are about to see an amazing interview with the legendary Reggie Fils-Aimé. But that's not all for the Kinda Funny Gamescast this week. Later on this week, we're going to be doing another episode with the full Patreon post show and all of that. And while you wait for that, if you're on the Epic Game Store, remember to use our Epic creator code, Kinda Funny. On to the interview. What's up and welcome back to the Kinda Funny Gamescast, where each and every week we get together to talk about video games and all the things that we love about them. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes, and I'm joined by Game Over Greggy himself, Greg Miller.
Hello, Tim.
And joining us today is Forbes 30 Under 30, a.k.a. the Game Awards Future Class, a.k.a. the new face of video games, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
Hello, Tim.
And joining us as well is the Texas Street Latino Heat, clicking heads and ripping them to shreds, the globetrotting, headshotting Nitro Rifle from twitch.tv, Andy Cortez.
Tim, I had a salad for lunch. I'm feeling great.
I'm very, very proud of you, Andy.
Do you have the baby salad carrots
watch
in it?
Continues.
Oh, yeah. Baby carrots, some cucumbers. Yeah. I have the whole nine yards.
Baby carrots in a salad?
Yeah.
It's what he does. Don't worry, Bless. Don't worry about it. We got no time.
Is this a thing? Is that a thing people do? I've never had a salad with baby carrots in it.
Oh,
add some fun to your salad.
Reggie, you putting baby carrots in a salad?
I'm just watching all this and saying, I don't even eat salads anymore. You guys are just so just over the top here.
This is the crunch that it would add to the salad.
Yeah, it's a good texture. I love it.
Yeah. And I got to get to it before we go on too long with this salad talk. Of course, as a born and raised Nintendo fanboy, through the good, the bad, everything in between, it is my complete and utter honor to welcome you and welcome to the show the former president of Nintendo of America, Reggie Fils-Aimé, and more importantly, the author of his new, and thanks to all of you out there, soon to be New York Times bestselling book, Disrupting the Game, coming out May 3rd, Reggie Fils-Aimé.
Well, thank you for that fantastic introduction. Looking forward to this conversation, looking forward to talking about games, talking a little disruption, talking just everything that's going on. So thanks for having me on.
My first question for you, Reggie, is, how is retirement, and is it more work than work used to be?
A good friend gave me some advice when I retired, and he said, Reggie, you're not the type to just sit around, put your feet up, so go figure out what you love to do and find ways to do it with people that you enjoy spending time with. So board service, giving speeches, sitting down, writing this book, it's all things that I have tremendously enjoyed. But it's not retirement in a typical sense. So it's fun. I'm having fun.
What is the book for those that don't know?
So Disrupting the Game, from the Bronx to the Top of Nintendo, in the genre, they call it a business memoir. But to me, what it is a series of stories that are punctuated with lessons, principles, things that the reader or the audiobook listener should take away from the book and hopefully apply to their own situation, whether they're a student, whether they're a podcaster, whether they're a business person, whatever the case may be, but just some lessons that I've learned the way in my, 60 plus years of life, 40 plus years as a business executive. That's the book. And hopefully people will find it a bit inspiring, a bit peek under the tent at the world of Nintendo and some of the other brands I've worked in. But more than anything else, I really hope people take something away that they could apply to their everyday life.
One of the things that I think is so cool about you is that you are one of the few legends in the video game space. Like, your name is synonymous with what video games are to anybody that take it even one step deeper than just, I've played a video game once in my life. Because I feel like anyone out there that's played a video game, You make a choice. You're either a gamer after that point, or you're like, this isn't for me, right? And if you decide to go down that path, like, you eventually start to realize that how deep it all goes. And there's only a handful of names that everybody knows, and Reggie is one of them. And being associated with Nintendo, a company that is so obviously well regarded over time as like almost the Disney of video games. What was it like to be not only the face of that, but to now be what will always be looked back at in 30, 50, 100 plus years as one of the first legendary figures of this industry?
So for me, I was a video game player before I was a video game executive, right? And so for all of the people who love to play video games, I was just like you. I was, you know, playing my first games on the early, early systems, but my own first personal system was SNES. And so playing all of those great games, you know, I had almost 80 games for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, had, you know, some similar number on N64, had a PS2, had an original Xbox. So I came into this industry having played a wide range of games on a wide range of different systems. And so for me, you know, making that transition to be a Nintendo executive, I had credibility. I knew the content. From an outsider's perspective, I had a sense of the industry. I had a bunch of different ideas that I thought needed to be implemented to move the business forward. So for me, it was the right opportunity at the right time with the right amount of background and information that I had just from loving games and playing games to be thought of as a singular personality in the video game industry is, you know, on one hand, overwhelming. And it's because, you know, for me, you know, without the creativity of Shigeru Miyamoto, without, you know, the business acumen of Satoru Iwata, you know, who knows? I probably wouldn't have lasted in the video game industry for over 15 years. But, you know, to be part of Nintendo's legacy, to be part of the industry's legacy, certainly is a tremendous honor for me.
Reggie, you mentioned growing up with games and playing a lot of games and being a gamer before you actually worked in the industry. Can I ask, do you have a favorite game?
You know, so my favorite game, 5 years ago, if you would have asked me that question, favorite game, Legend of Zelda's Link to the Past. That's a game that enthralled me, that I played for hours and hours and hours, went back and replayed it as Nintendo made it available on other systems. But now my favorite game is Breath of the Wild. And, you know, it is a game that I go back to about every 6 months to pick it back up and to explore a little bit more. That game, I can't tell you how many hundreds of hours I've put into.
Have you been playing any games recently? Because, you know, if you bring up Breath of the Wild, I feel like the conversation, back when that came out a couple of years ago was, this is a transformative experience that we haven't really seen since things like Ocarina of Time or Link to the Past. Zelda seems to be tied to this a lot. But Elden Ring nowadays, yes. Are you a FromSoft guy or have you given it a shot?
So love FromSoft, love Elden Ring. But I'll tell you, one of the big differences for me now in the activities I do, I play a lot more games pre-launch, games that are in development, games from well-known studios, game from independent studios. I'm playing a lot more pre-release software than I ever did at Nintendo. And so that sucks up time for me playing Elden Ring or playing other content that's out broadly available today. So it's a really interesting time for me. Yes, I still dabble with all of the current stuff, but I play a lot more of the of content that's still early in development.
Was that sort of your first thing post-retirement? You retire, it's like, all right, I'm going to go to all the other game developers and just like, let me try it all. Like, yeah. Now I'm kind of like free to do this.
It was, the opportunity to play a wider range of content certainly was something I enjoyed and continue to enjoy in my retirement. But make no mistake, when I was with Nintendo, I played all of the content from all of the existing platforms. You had to understand where the market was going and what was hot and what could move the player.
So you mentioned, you know, go for it, Bless.
I'll say, to go back to Link to the Past is the answer. You know, I think that's fun because obviously you played that before you ended up at Nintendo. Was that always the goal for you? Did you want to always work in the games industry? Did you know you wanted to work at Nintendo? Or is it happenstance that like, yeah, I loved Link to the Past. Now I work at, I know you were at Pizza Hut before, right? Like, was there always the thought of you wanted to end up at Nintendo in the games industry?
No. Yeah, it was. And it's interesting because I talk to a lot of young people today and they're fixated. Oh, I want to get into the video game business. I want to do this. I want to do that. You know, for me, it really was a situation where, you know, my capability, all of the things that I had done in business and in life came together with a recruiter's call to interview for the executive vice president of sales and marketing job at Nintendo. Once the opportunity came, you know, I certainly grabbed it and drove it. But it was not a situation where I was sitting back thinking, you know, this is what I want to do with my life. I was fortunate to work in a range of great industries, you know, beer, pizza, TV and entertainment, touching on music. And it was just, you know, my capability meeting the opportunity of Nintendo that brought it to life.
Did those skills translate? Like, was there stuff that before getting to Nintendo you had learned from other industries that you're able to bring in when you did join Nintendo?
Absolutely. What translates is, you know, a maniacal focus on the player or the consumer. What translates is how you think about innovation. How do you think about providing things that are new and different? How do you surprise people with products that they never thought could actually be delivered to them in some way, shape, or form? People management skills, all of these types of skills were translatable to Nintendo, and I would argue they're translatable to just about any industry.
And that's, if you don't mind me jumping in here, where I want to go, is that yesterday, because of the Easter holiday when we're recording, we got delayed copies of the book. We booked you a while back, but we finally got it. We got our copies yesterday. And I was very much of the, all right, cool. I'll skim it. I'll have some questions. I'll, you know, fill in the gap, blah, blah, blah. I ended up finishing it, and it never felt like homework. And I was so impressed with the book. For the top of the chart, and even if you weren't here, I would just say, like, it's a great read everybody should get, and there's so much to go into. But where we're at right now in the conversation of all these places you worked, which I had no idea. I thought it was, you know, you were at Pizza Hut, you came here. I didn't realize it was Pepsi, Procter & Gamble, Derby, Guinness, VH1, the list goes on. But what I found so impressive about it is at the top of the thing, you said it was a business memoir. And for me, I had heard, oh, it's a memoir. I was thinking it's going to be this, you know, autobiography, your career and how you went through it. For me, the book smacks so much of like something like Creativity Inc., where it is as you write and tell these stories. And again, I want to honestly thank you for being so honest. Like, you talk about your relationship with Mr. Iwata. I mean, it's how you start the book, right? With him being sick. You talk about your own journey with your family. You talk about your career. You talk about your mentors. But when you go into these sections that you call the so what, you tell this story, then there's the so what, which is like the snapshot of the lesson we just learned or what you took away from it. You're talking about these principles and ideas being able to be applied anywhere, whether you're at Nintendo, Procter & Gamble, or being a journalist or doing whatever, being podcasters, whatever you do for the daily life. Like, that's what I love about the book is the fact that it's a memoir, but it almost reads like self-help. It almost reads like you're trying to give me this toolbox to go through and, you know, be able to use your lessons in a way that I thought was just incredible.
Well, thank you for that. That really touches me. And I say this because, you know, everything I've tried to do in my life, I try and do it with a purpose. I try and do it in a way that's different, hopefully better than what's been done before. And when I thought about writing this book, I went and read a number of other people's business memoirs. You know, I read Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. I read the Eisner book. I read all of these business memoirs. And each one felt to me to be two books smushed together. It was the memoir part, right? So here's where I am. Here's what I did. Here's how I grew up. And then it was the business lessons part. And what I wanted to do was to create a book that was, if you will, a whole piece of cloth. Yes, I'm telling stories. I'm telling stories that punctuate a key business lesson or a key principle, and I highlight it and I demonstrate it and I hopefully help the reader understand why I'm sharing this, the so what of the story, so that they could take it and apply it. And you know, I hope that's a key innovative part of the book. I really do hope, just as you did, Greg, that people take that away and say, wow, this is really meaningful for me to apply moving forward. Hopefully that's the innovation and the disruption that I've brought forward with this book.
Well, even the way you talk about the perfect memo, you know what I mean? Like, I haven't written a memo in a long time, but I write a lot, in the way you boil it down, I'm like, what you're trying to do, I'm like, oh, that's actually is helpful for as many pitch documents as we write and things like that. Like, if I can get something out of this, anybody can get out. The main question I had, though, closing it, the question I have is, did you ever forgive your son for beating The Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past. Because it, there's a great story in here, like he's talking about. He has the SNES, he loves Mario World, but then Zelda comes around and changes everything. And I think it's you stay up till 3 a.m, but you get to the final boss and you're like, I'm going to destroy this the next day. And your son got on your save file and you heard him cheering as you came through the front door. I was like, oh my God!
So I did forgive him, especially when I was able
to him since.
Yeah, in weird ways.
Especially when I was able to play. I went back and played Link to the Past, you know, when it was digital content available, probably on the Wii. And so I finally got to finish it, and I finally got to see the end credits, which I never saw because I didn't get to see that in the original. But you know, what's the great button to that story is I told that story at Entertainment Software Association dinner where Shigeru Miyamoto was being honored with some lifetime award. So I'm in front of 1,000 people. I'm telling the story about how Miyamoto touched people, touched me before I was even a Nintendo executive, and how this story, you know, this game, it was you know, a second job for me as I played it every evening. And this touching story with my son beating the game, and I never got the chance to beat it, if you will, for the very first time. I get back to our table, and Miyamoto turns to me and he says, "Reggie-san, is that a true story?" And it's like, of course it's true. This is, you know, this was my life back in the 90s. I was playing all your great content. Yes, I finally forgave my son, but now he has had to live through, you know, hearing me talk about this story in a variety of different places, and now committing it to paper in the book.
Reggie, you've had a career filled with successes, just kind of all across the board. Were there any games that you truly believed in that just didn't quite hit the mass market like you really wanted or hoped for it to?
Been a few. Metroid Other M. I don't know if you remember that game. Metroid game.
Remember me? Yeah.
You know, I really thought that that was going to be a defining moment for the Metroid franchise. It was giving much more of a perspective about Samus. I really thought that was going to be a killer moment in the franchise history, and it wasn't. It didn't deliver, not the business results. It really didn't touch the player the way we hoped it would. And you know, interestingly, I was in a large group meeting, a strategy meeting, with Iwata and Miyamoto and the game developers, and we talked about why not. And yeah, again, I was always the brash American. I was the one who would say kind of, you know, what I believed was truth, to try and help the business move forward. And the point I made to the developers was, you know, it took too long to get into the meat and potatoes of this game. You know, the first 5 hours of the game, you kind of plodded along. There wasn't a lot of payoff. There was a lot of dialogue. And I'm sure I pissed people off in the room, but I said, you know, the learning here is the player wants to get into this much faster. Yes, there are elements we need to do from a tutorial standpoint, help them understand the game mechanics, but you need to move things further along much quicker. And hopefully that that advice had a little bit of an impact on the developers in the room.
On the opposite end of that question, actually, I want to ask, is there a game that came out that got a way bigger reception than you thought it would while working on it?
You know, there are always games that surprise. I have to say Wii Fit, for the magnitude of sales and how the sell-through happened so quickly, I have to say that that was a surprise. And again, you have to step back and remember, this was essentially a $100 game because it came with the balance board. You know, for the more active player, it was a bit of a tough sell. So we really had to expand the audience and get people to not only commit to a $100 game, but potentially even to buy the hardware. So the sell-through and the pace of sell-through on that game was surprising. And it's not to say that I didn't know it was great, it was entertaining, and something that would do well, but the pace and the ongoing sell-through of that game was just phenomenal. It certainly surprised me.
It seems like one of those perfect places, perfect time sort of moment that can only happen if all the stars align. I was working at Best Buy at that time, and good Lord, the amount of questions we got about the Wii Fit, and like, no, we've been out of stock for a week and a half. We'll have a new shipment coming in. Like, it does seem like that is one of those games that just for whatever reason, kind of similarly to Animal Crossing at the start of the pandemic, kind of just having this explosive moment. I feel like that was the same for Wii Fit at that time.
I think absolutely. And you know, and part of it was while we committed to produce huge, huge quantities, but because it was packed along with this piece of hardware, you know, the supply chain was always a bit challenged. And that piece of software was, you know, immediately selling out probably for the first 2 years that was available.
Did that impact a lot of what Nintendo did after? Because I know, like, on the Switch they have Ring Fit, and I've been messing around with Ring Fit a lot in the last couple of weeks, and like using it, like buying it, it was more expensive than a traditional game. I think it was around $80 when I got it on Amazon, and using it, like, I didn't have much experience with Wii Fit. I did love the Wii back in the day, but like Wii Fit, I was young, I didn't really have use for it. Now, you know, playing Ring Fit Adventure, I've been blown away, one, by how fun it is, how well designed it is, and then also like how good of a workout that I'm getting. Like doing the post workout, like check your pulse. You know, I put my thumb to the reader and it actually like checks my pulse for me. That is stuff that has blown me away because I didn't even know that was a function on the Switch. And I'm sure, like, you know, between now having Ring Fit in the modern era and having Wii Fit back then during the Wii, like, is there more stuff from that end that like Nintendo has tried to double down on in terms of fitness and video games that spawned from Wii Fit?
I think what you'll always see is Nintendo wants to get as many people picking up their hardware, their software as possible. So what you're going to continue to see from the company is certainly just a push to get what, you know, what you would call a non-traditional gamer to be playing the system. I think with the latest you know, sports collection coming from the Switch, you know, that speaks to Wii Sports. I think that's another play to continue expanding the audience, right?
For sure.
Shout out to Chime for sponsoring this episode. No one likes waiting on a paycheck, especially when you've got bills due. Good thing there's Chime. Now you can get your paycheck up to 2 days early with direct deposit. That's up to two more days to save, pay bills, and generally just feel good about your money situation. But Chime is more than just about getting paid early. It's also an award-winning mobile app, checking account, debit card, and optional savings account. So, what are you waiting for? Hopefully not your paycheck. You can get started with Chime today. Applying for a free account takes less than 2 minutes. You can get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. chime.com/kfgames. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank NA, members FDIC. Early access to direct deposit funds depends on hair. Shout out to Babbel for sponsoring this episode. For most of us, learning a second language in high school or college wasn't exactly a high point in our academic careers. Definitely not me. I took Spanish, didn't do well in it the first time, did okay the second time. You know what? We'll move on. Now, thanks to Babbel, a language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions, there's an addictively fun and easy way to learn a new language. Whether you'll be traveling abroad, connecting in a deeper way with family, or you just have some free time, Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons that you'll actually use in the real world. Greg Miller has been learning French little by little, and now when he goes back home to Canada to see Jen's family, he'll be able to communicate better. Isn't that a lovely situation? Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language. Language on the go. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Right now, you can save up to 60% off your subscription when you go to babbel.com/kindoffunny. That's babbel.com/kindoffunny for up to 60% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life. One more time, babbel.com/kindoffunny. Shout out to ExpressVPN for sponsoring this episode. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like walking your dog in public without securing them on a leash. Most of the time, you'll probably be fine, but what if one day your dog runs away or gets dognapped? It's better to be careful, especially when it's as simple as using ExpressVPN. We've been using ExpressVPN here at Kinda Funny for years now. Me personally, I've been using it, and I know that my internet browsing is secure. It just gives me that peace of mind that I need. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network in cafes, hotels, airports, you're online. Online data is not secure, but ExpressVPN creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet so they can't, and it's great. I use it on my desktop. I use it on my phone. I use it everywhere that I use the internet. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. You can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. That's expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. ExpressVPN.com/kindoffunny. Going back to the Metroid Other M conversation, I remember watching that E3 as was a ritual for me and my friends of getting together, watching all the conferences, and kind of just freaking out, marking out to all the announcements being made. That E3 from Nintendo specifically, as a born and raised Nintendo fan, meant so much to me because it was the same E3 we got Metroid Other M with the Team Ninja reveal. We got Super Mario Galaxy 2. Like, it really felt like I just got chills even saying it right now. Like, it's such a, like, not just return to form, but it felt like such a big moment for Nintendo. And, you know, Other M turned out to be what it was, but at that time we didn't know that yet, so we just thought it was going to be something super spectacular. And on the other side, Mario Galaxy 2 ended up being something truly special, not just as a video game, but as a first time sequel to a Mario game since the original NES, that we got a sequel in the same style of what we've seen before, with those expectations kind of being met. What were the decision-making factors for Galaxy 2 happening as an idea? Because that just seems so foreign, and even going forward from that. And I kind of want the insight on what that could relate to, like a Mario Kart. Seeing Mario Kart 8 being such a dominant force in the industry for the last decade, almost at this point, in its different iterations, on our different news shows, we are constantly talking about, why wouldn't they do a Mario Kart 9? Like, the sales are so high, like, the audience is there. I wonder if there's a connective tissue between those ideas, and if you have any insight to that.
Well, look, what I can share is this, and you know, this is philosophical commentary that I've given in the past during interviews, so I'm not sharing. I'm not breaking any rules. Sharing
no NDAs being out violated. Of school.
Yeah. So, first, Nintendo's philosophy is that they want to share one great experience per franchise on every system. Meaning, they want to have a great Mario platformer on a new system. They want to have a great side-scrolling Mario. They want to have a great Zelda experience. They want to have a great Metroid experience. That's their philosophy. They don't always execute against that. And sometimes they over-deliver. Sometimes there might be two platforming Mario games on a particular platform. So that's always the mentality. And, the success of Super Mario Galaxy absolutely begat Galaxy 2, because the company saw that, wow, this mechanic was really positively received. The developer on that was Mr. Koizumi. So, it gave him kind of that next piece of work to push forward on. That's the way Nintendo thinks about game development. So, when you think about a Mario Kart 9 or some future Mario Kart experience, again, their mentality is, we want to do a great novel experience on every platform. Mario Kart 8 really was a Wii U game that was added to for the Switch. So conceptually, they're probably working on a Mario Kart 9. But they won't release a Mario Kart 9 until they figure out what's going to be new, different, compelling, what's going to move the franchise forward, because that's what they want to do on every iteration. So, from a fan's perspective, and now I'm purely a fan. Everything I've worked on has come onto the marketplace in the 3 years that I've been retired. So like everyone else, I'm waiting to see what is going to be that next great Mario Kart invention. What's going to be so new and unique, hopefully in that dedicated Metroid experience. That's the way they think about it. That's what fans hope for.
I really hope that some of the last things and decisions you made, you can blink if this is true or not, blink twice if it's true. Link's Awakening Remake, Oracle of Ages, Oracle of Seasons, like that game was just such a delight. It was so cute and it came out of nowhere. Like that, I remember that direct being so surprised by the fact that this Game Boy game is getting a re-release in this gorgeous 3D style with this amazing sort of tilt shift and like what a amazing concept and an easy win, really, bringing something that's so beloved like Link's Awakening to this sort of newer form and this newer console. Oracle of Ages, Oracle of Seasons. I hope that was your last directive, like before you clocked out for the day. You said, "Do this."
One more thing.
You know, but what's so interesting is, Link's Awakening. When that was announced, there were a lot of passionate Zelda fans that were kind of shaking their head. It's like, so why redo this? If you're gonna go back and remake a classic game, why this one from that era? And the look is a little different. It was one of these that I think it wasn't until the players really got their hands on it, really explored it, really saw how it all worked together, that they recognized that, yes, once again, the company had made a great decision in bringing this game back and doing a true full remake.
You mentioned being in the same place as us in terms of anticipating, like, okay, what is the next Mario Kart going to be, or when are we gonna get it, right? And like, kind of being in that place of anticipation for future stuff. Besides Breath of the Wild 2, is there a project from Nintendo that you are most anticipating?
Certainly, like every player, I'm waiting for all of the new tidbits that could be shared for that next Breath of the Wild. In terms of other great content, there are things that I want to see. I want to see what is that update on Metroid Prime. I want to see what that is going to look like and how that is taking shape. I want to see other older franchises with a new look. I'd love to see something with Kid Icarus in a new direction there. So, I'll take it all. Oh, how long did it take until Earthbound and the Mother franchise came up? Don't hold your breath. I'm not there. I don't know what's going on. I'll share a little bit, and this is actually in the audiobook bonus content that I did with Jeff Keighley. We talk a little bit about the Mother series. And while Mr. Iwata was alive, he really understood the passion that fans had for the Mother series. And you need to remember that it was under his watch that Earthbound Beginnings was first brought onto the virtual console platform. The company knows that there's a lot of passion for that franchise. But thinking about how to make it current, thinking about how to make it bigger than just the, let me call it the relatively small group of fans that desperately want to see Mother 3 or something next in the Earthbound series. That's what the company, I'm sure, has been thinking about, and they just haven't figured out yet the solution to that, or at least they haven't been prepared to talk about it.
Is there a game in the classic Nintendo library that hasn't been around for a long time that you think is primed for coming back?
Boy, I'd have to literally sit down and think about all of those great franchises. I mean, that's one of the things that people really don't understand. The company has some 40, plus different franchises that every once and again, they go back and dust off and bring forward, as well as relatively newer franchises that they're constantly playing around with. So I'd have to sit back and really think about what is a game that I'm missing that I'd love to see done for a current day and with a current message. You're showing a little Donkey Kong. the team,
very subtle, Barrett, very subtle.
Exactly. a subtle little message. You know, it's been a while since we've seen a brand new Donkey Kong and a brand new take, but who knows? You know, like a fan, I'm just waiting.
Jumping in here, like, this is a loaded question. I'm just going to say a lot of things, and I just want you to answer however you take it, however you feel is right. So, like, Nintendo is a very Japanese-first company, and I feel like it's been that way for a long time. You being the president of Nintendo America, from the kind of media side, we know what it's like to deal with the Japanese companies versus the Western companies and all of that. And as we cover this next-gen idea and wherever we're at now, the console wars, all of it, there's the conversation of what PlayStation's done, what Xbox has done, services versus hardware versus software. Where do you think Nintendo lies now, and how does it differ from when you were really actively in it? And does that all matter at all? And do you ever see Nintendo kind of adopting the kind of methodologies of the others, or are we in a place where everyone's doing their own thing?
So I'm gonna break your question down and answer it in two parts. First, you know, Nintendo is not a Japanese company. Nintendo is a very unique, you know, Nintendo is headquartered in Kyoto, which makes the culture and the personality of the company very different than, you know, say Sony headquartered in Tokyo. I think you just have to step back and say the company is unique. It thinks about its business through its own lens. I was fortunate in my time there to partner exceptionally well with Satoru Iwata, with Shigeru Miyamoto, with the entire leadership there. And it was a moment in time where myself, a handful of other people were able to bring other perspectives that helped the company have significant success during that time frame. So it's not just a Japanese-oriented company. It's a very unique culture that pulls its influences from a variety of different places. So the second part of the question around, so look, what's the future? Where does it go from here? So I'll answer the question not from, you know, a Nintendo or Nintendo executive perspective, but I would argue where this industry is going is much more toward a software first, content first, franchise first type of environment. And this is where, you know, if I'm thinking about a breakthrough vision in the games industry, I'm much more in a software service, you know, deliver content over an extended period of time, a variety of different franchises. You know, I like the Game Pass model of what Microsoft has been able to do. And arguably, if there's a company that could do the quote-unquote Netflix of games type of model, it is Nintendo, right? Given all of the legacy content, plus given their focus as a content creation company with all of those wonderful franchises. That's where I would go. And especially as 5G is more applied on a global basis, as in-home Wi-Fi gets better and better and better, because that's where the problem is, right? The latency in that last 500 yards into the consumer's home, once that's solved, you know, a pure digital internet connectivity type model, I think is where this business can go. And charging a consumer $20 a month to have an all-you-can-eat library of games, I think is the model of the future.
So we don't have much more time with you. I do have a couple more hard-hitting questions that I have for you, and you can pass if you don't want to answer them. If you have a good answer, I'd love it, but I got to at least try my best here. So you are a legend of the industry. I opened this talking about that. There are very few out there. There's the Miyamotos. There's the Kojimas. We put the Reggies up there, right? I would even put the Bill Trentons up there personally. But are there people that you feel aren't getting that type of conversation but deserve it?
I think that the next round of conversations we need to have are around those game developers. who have developed content across a variety of different platforms, variety of different genres. I think that's where the next, let me call it, superstars of the industry are going to be. And those are going to be the names we're going to talk more about versus, you know, folks like me, the suits, the business guys. I think we need to focus on the creators and giving the creators much more credit than they've had to date.
And then the second one, this is probably the one you might want to back off of, but I got to ask it. Is there anything crazy that you can reveal? Is there any canceled game that the world doesn't know about that you just want to tell us about here at the Kinda Funny Games Cast?
No. You know, and I say this because, again, it comes back to, you know, what's my intention today? What is it that I'm trying to do today? You know, my intention is not to share, you know, the deepest of dark secrets from Nintendo or the air the dirtiest of laundry. I have no desire to be playing that game. What I'm trying to do in my retirement is I want to help as many people achieve their potential, whether that's being a business leader, whether that's being a great creative talent, whatever the case may be. I'm trying to help that next generation be the very best they can and achieve as much as they can. And so for me, it's much more of a positive message. It's much more focus on sharing these principles and these skills and these capabilities versus you know, telling all of those negative stories, and whether they're from Nintendo, whether they're from P&G, or whether they're from anywhere else in my past.
All right, now to close out the show, I got two more for you. I lied to you. One, I want Greg to ask a question, and then I'm coming back for the hardest hitting question I've asked you yet. Greg, go for it.
Reggie, so the book's Disrupting the Game out May 3rd. As I said, I find the book incredibly inspirational. I love hearing your stories and what you learn from them. The one thing, though, is you are now sitting in your ivory tower while you give this advice. No skin in the game. My question, you call it disrupting the game, and I really think your disruption and what you talk about and how you were a disruptor comes into view in the Nintendo stuff, right? Where, like, they're interviewing you, and you're like, well, I want to have a meeting with Iwata. And they're like, nobody does that. and then it's the same thing of, like, when they tell you, you know, they don't believe in the people stuff. And, like, you came in and changed that and shook that up. Was there ever a point in any of your jobs, but Nintendo specifically, I guess, where you were afraid you were going to disrupt yourself out of a job? Like, how do you, for people who are reading this book and taking this advice and want to take those chances, right? They want to drive change. How did you get over that?
Absolutely. I constantly thought that I was going to disrupt myself out of the job. I constantly thought that, you know, there's a day where I'm going to be fired. And I talk about one of these stories in the book. You know, the 2006 E3 presentation. So this is where we're showing off the Wii, we're showing off Wii Sports, we're showing off a finished Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess. And, you know, at the time, Nintendo would do two live events. In the morning, we would do a press event, and it was all about getting, you know, the jaded press on board with what it is that we're trying to do. And then in the afternoon, we would be talking to our retailers. And that's when we would be looking to get the retailers excited to place place bets and place orders and to show their support for the company. And in that morning press briefing, we closed the event with Wii Sports. Earlier, we showed a little bit of footage and gameplay for Twilight Princess, but we closed the show with Wii Sports. And it was a huge hit because, you know, the press was blown away by the way you could wave the Wii remote and play tennis. Right after that event, Mr. Iwata came to me and he wanted to change how we would close the show for the retailers, where it was established that we were going to close the show with Legend of Zelda, because that was the big hit. That's what was going to drive hardware sales from the retailer's perspective. And he wanted to change how we would do that event. And I held my ground and I argued that we shouldn't do it. We shouldn't do it so late. It can create all types of risk of things that could go wrong. And for the retailers, They needed to be sold on Zelda. Plus, also in that audience were all of our publishing partners. And we needed EA and Activision and all of our retail publishing partners to see that we could create an audience for their more traditional style of video games. And this was an argument. And you know, it was an argument in private between the two of us, but it was an argument. And in the end, he relented and we closed the show with Zelda. And in the end, it was a massive hit. Well, we get word, you know, the E3 closes on a Friday. We get word on a Monday that Mr. Watt is coming back to the U.S., wants to speak with me. Then he's going to speak with the rest of the leadership team. I was convinced he was coming back to fire me. I was convinced that I had pushed back one too many times, that I had been that disruptive, argumentative, pushy American one too many times, and he was coming back to fire me. And I walked into a meeting with him and my direct boss at the time, Tatsumi Kimishima, with a PowerPoint deck looking to convince him and potentially stave off my firing that we had done the right thing and the way we had executed that E3. Well, lo and behold, that's where I was promoted to president and chief operating officer. He came back in order to deliver that promotion. But I was convinced I was going to be fired. I'd pushed back one too many times.
If you like that story, there are so many of them in there. You got to get this book. Again, Reggie, I want to thank you again for being so open and honest about it. Like, your relationship with Mr. Iwata is so special, and you capture that in the book, and it's very beautiful.
Thank you for that.
And of course, that book is Disrupting the Game, coming out May 3rd. You can get it everywhere, and everyone out there, we got to get it to the New York Times bestseller list. We got this, baby. Let's go all the way to the top. We're doing it. But the final question to let you go, Reggie, it's the hard-hitting one. I got to drop it on you. If you could cosplay as any video game character, who would it be?
Come on, that's easy. I'd cosplay as Link. Absolutely.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. Absolutely. But may I suggest one other option for you? Because I feel like you got it down. Barrett, please bring it up. We got Brock from Pokemon here, because right now you are already rocking the outfit and it is utterly fantastic. Nice. So I just want to give you a major shout out for already killing the game there.
I like that. So your producer was so on it, because I typically don't wear this outfit in interviews. You know, I'm typically a little bit more dressed up, but nice pull out there.
Like, I'm never gonna dress down again.
Fantastic stuff, loved far and wide. Reggie, thank you so much for all of your time, and thank you for everything that you've done for the video game industry. You are obviously an icon, and we can't wait to see what you continue to do. Again, everyone, please go check out the book. But Reggie, do you have any final words for everyone?
No, thank you for having me. Thanks for having the opportunity for the conversation. And go pick up the book. I really believe, you know, whether you're a Nintendo fan or not, whether you're a video game player or not, there's something in there for you.
Thank you so much. And until next time, I love you all. Goodbye.
See you.